This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 254 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Welcome to the late night edition of Shudders Inc. Podcast.com. Hi.
Very good, very good. Yes, we are recording very late at night.
I'll turn that annoying background music on. Apparently we used to have annoying background music behind our podcast.
Yes, apparently we did. So.
Yeah. If I'd known, I would have turned the porn down earlier. They would have heard it in the background.
Yes, well, it's very late though. Yeah, very late. Yeah. It's 10:30 at night and we're just starting to record. We're normally recording at 9. So.
Yes.
Anyway.
We could have said, look, we're not going to do it this week, but we put in for our listeners.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Except for last week when we left something out. Last week I did have on our list
the week before when you had some wussy to lie.
Oh, no, it's going to scratch up.
Says who here the following week complained about his sore back.
Yeah.
Now, last week I was going to mention an email that we got from David Marland, and because we just kind of jumped backwards and forwards around all the things that we had on our list, I inadvertently skipped it. And it wasn't until I came to editing the podcast together that I went, oh, we were meant to cover that and we forgot all about it. So, David, my apologies that I didn't address this last week.
It was all Bruce's fault.
That's right. It was all my
fault. I wanted to mention it, but he said no.
Yeah, right.
Don't say a word.
So David sent us this email regarding the DxO software. And he said,
fine software that it is.
Yeah. He said, hi, guys. Only just got to hear the latest podcast with Rob Coates' comments on DxO. Same question as my last email, but I note he does not use Lightroom. Like many others, I've invested in Lightroom and Photoshop package. How to get the best of Lightroom, Photoshop, and DxO in an integrated workflow without going bananas. Check out this thread. And he's given us the link, which I'll put in.
He's not asking us for advice. He's just showing us somebody actually knows what they're talking about.
That's right. So the thread will be in the show notes. He said, there are recommendations for plugins, and they all get horribly complicated, but the last comment from a user named Romke on the 25th of October 2013, page 2, I think gives a simple approach. Keeping it all simple is good. Cheers. So
simple's good.
Yeah, I remember going and looking at that last week, but now I've completely forgotten what Romke had to say. So I'm just going to leave the link in the show notes. If you're interested, go check it out.
I think we actually were talking before last week's recording and saying we weren't going to talk much about it.
That's right.
Because of our couple of thousand listeners, there's only going to be a very small percentage that's going to want to know about it.
Exactly.
So rather than talk about it, we'll just say, here's a good solution. If you're in that situation, go check out the
note. Absolutely. And I remember reading it and thinking that makes a lot of sense.
Me too.
For those who have that.
It was good stuff, David. Thank you.
Thank you. Funny that email should happen to mention Rob Coates, because through the week we did get another email from Rob Coates over in Perth in Western Australia. He said, dear Bruce and Glyn, I was recently at a riverside park in Guildford in Perth. Fixed to several trees in the car park was a flyer pleading for the return of a stolen laptop. The owner's car had been broken into, and a bag containing the laptop top and two external hard drives had been taken. The owner is a quote-unquote keen enthusiast photographer, and on the laptop and drives was the last 7 months worth of photos he had taken. The clear lesson here for me and my six fellow listeners is that if you're going to back up your photos...
I make the jokes here. Thanks, Rob. I make the jokes.
If you're going to back up your photos, don't leave the whole damn shooting match in a public car park.
No, he used an acronym there you haven't mentioned.
He did.
If you're going to back up your photos, FFS, don't leave... What's he mean by that? Don't leave the whole damn shooting match in the public... Or even in the car in the public. You should never have your hard drives with your computer anyway. They should always be
Yeah, like I don't know
traveling,
why.
You don't keep your memory cards with your camera when you're traveling.
So anyway, lesson learned.
And it reminds me of a friend who years ago was coming home from a wedding, popped into a friend's place just for a minute to grab something, came out back window, smash, camera gone, all the film gone, wedding gone. Don't keep that stuff together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, we say this probably every 6 months, and it's probably been 6 months since I mentioned it last.
We should say it again.
Go over it again, that you should have three copies of your photos, and that is the copy that lives on the computer or laptop which you use every day. So they're like your everyday working copies of your images. You should then have an external hard drive that is a backup of all of those photos that is kept in another room in your house, so somewhere else other than where your main computer is kept. And then you should have a third copy, which is either another external hard drive kept at another house, so at a mate's place, at your parents' house, whatever, or leave it at work or something, or you should have them backed up to the cloud. Now, given how ubiquitous and cheap cloud storage has become these days.
It's everywhere as well, Bruce.
It is also everywhere. That's right. I think
it's not just ubiquitous.
That's right. You could almost forego the second hard drive copy if you just have one copy on your working laptop/desktop machine at home, and then made sure that you had a backup in the cloud. That would probably suffice. But hey, having a third copy is not a bad thing at any stage. So,
you forgot the most important copy, Bruce.
And which one's that?
That's the one on your phone, so you can show off your photos.
That's right.
No point in having a home new computer when you can't. You want to be able to say, "Oh, look at the photo I took last." It's got to be on your phone.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the modern day slideshow.
It is.
That's your iPad, you want this little Pico projector so you can project up on the wall.
That's right. And again, apologies for the useful information.
The oft-repeated useful information.
That's right.
There's one thing I've always believed in, Bruce, and that's repetition, repetition, repetition.
Excellent.
how's your week been anyway, my friend?
Have you taken
any photos?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, I took about 180 of them.
My goodness. Yes. Are you okay? Yeah. Is your camera okay?
It's just one extreme to the other with me.
Oh, what did you take photos of?
I got tickets to the Top Gear Festival at Eastern Creek.
Did you?
So on Saturday, Max and myself and a mate from Sydney and his son, who's about the same age as Max, the four of us all went out to Eastern Creek for the Top Gear Festival. They had Jeremy Clarkson and James May there. Mm-hmm. No sign of Richard Hammond.
Well, it's so short, you might have been there.
Yeah. And it was quite a good day. It was really good. There was a lot more there than I expected. I thought it would just be cars hooning around on the track and that was it. But there was actually lots of exhibits. Lots of car clubs had brought, their various, cars and put them on display, like a show and shine. So it was quite a good day. So I took a bunch of photos. I found the most interesting thing to photograph was the guys who were doing the drifting.
They were
drifting, even though these guys would could drift down a straight line of the track as well as around the corner, so it was great. It was just good fun, panning with them and getting some blurred background and getting sharp images of cars. And some of them had, I don't know how they do it, it's obviously some sort of chemical powder that they pour onto the back tires of the car, but they have coloured smoke.
Yeah.
And these guys had pink smoke. So they're drifting sideways down the track with these, their rear tires just spinning crazily and just pumping out all this bright pink smoke. It was awesome.
That's what's the good thing about the drifters, you said. There is smoke, there's visible action.
Yeah.
for you to photograph, yeah, as opposed to a car, which if you freeze it, you might as well be parked in a car park.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, getting to panning stuff, right, especially if you're shooting really fast vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah, can be tricky. It's not like racing cars that tend to be doing jumps and stuff where they're in the air and there's, no, you know, like you do with motorbikes and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, drifting certainly adds a little, the extra element to shoot, which is good.
Yeah. Nice. Shooting the Formula One car that was racing around for one of the races was bloody hard.
Oh, yeah.
Because those things move so damn quick.
Yeah.
Trying to pan with that. You know, I was trying to shoot it at, I think, about a 500th of a second. And
panning, yeah.
And but even, you know, so, I mean, you're panning so fast that even at a 500th, you're getting a blurred background.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. But remember, it's how far does the subject travel in that time frame that you're actually shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's I when I teach my Understand Your Camera workshop, you know, I do photos of myself running where they have to pan, and you know, we've got to use a fairly fast shutter speed because I am moving, you know, pretty quickly. they're shooting around about a 15th of a second. but I do like to tell them that, you know, you have to be, you know, if it was an object that was actually moving faster than myself, hard as it was to believe, you may need an even faster shutter speed. And I always use, because Melbourne is, of course, the Australian home of the Grand Prix.
That's right.
We always use that as a reference point. So if you are shooting those, you might be shooting at, you know, 500th or 1,000th of a second.
Yeah.
And then trying to pan and get the subject in that infinitesimal period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to take a lot more than 180 shots to get a bunch of good ones effectively.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and the good thing is if you're actually in a race, you've got multiple opportunities because the car's going around around. You've got one car doing one, you know, around a track once or twice. It's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of chances. So.
No, that's right.
So, yeah, cool. Well, good. At least you took some photos, dude.
I did.
Just all power to you.
Yes, and they're on Facebook if you want to have a look at them.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, the gander. I've got to tell you, because it's all about me.
Yeah.
I took one of my favorite photos I've taken in for ages this week.
Right.
Oh, was I. You know, I believe strongly in chasing serendipity.
Right. Yes.
You know, it's like when these elements come together that just happen to make photographs work.
Yeah. You were talking about this last week with the baboon and, you know, waiting for him to turn his head into the light.
Yeah. Where each element by themselves need to be there together.
Yeah.
To give the image strength, and each by themselves doesn't have anywhere near the impact. Well, it happened in spades this week.
Oh yeah.
And all I had on me was my iPhone.
No.
Well, it was in the middle of a shopping center.
But did it still work?
It was in the middle of a shop in the shopping center.
Okay.
But I got the photo.
Of?
I'm walking down this aisle in this shop, and I look up, and there is what could only be described as the grandfather of the Super Mario Brothers.
Right.
Yeah, the Nintendo guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, big moustache, yeah, the hat, right, the whole thing, walking towards me. And it's like, and I've instant just, and I don't know anything about these characters, but instantly I've got, it's a Super Mario Brothers grandfather. Instantly, it was like, there's all you could think of when you saw this guy.
Right.
But here's the serendipity.
Hmm.
As he walked towards me, on the shelf to his right were a bunch of stuffed Luigi and Mario Brother doll heads. So I've picked up the head and pretended to be taking a photo of the head and got a photo of him in the corner.
Nice.
Oh, man, I was stoked. I would have been happy if he sort of looked at me. Yeah, but, you know, that is serendipity. Is that not serendipity?
Yeah.
Or is that, how do these two elements come together?
That's awesome.
So that put a very big smile on my dial.
Cool.
As you can imagine. And that, mind you, at my last week, my Understand Your Camera workshop, I had this beautiful old guy there as well, and he was just a delight to shoot. So I got some lovely shots of him.
Right.
His name was Bob. Bob. And then my muse, it's not my muse, my kid, my youngest kid, came home yesterday from school, from childcare. She's 2 and a half, and she was looking so gorgeous. I couldn't not do a little photo shoot of her. And for the first time in her 2.5 years, she sat still.
Right.
She posed a little bit. She gave me a bit of feed, but she gave me a bit of action in front of the camera, and melted my wee heart. It did.
Awesome.
So I was rather delighted by the little 5-minute photo shoot in between putting the pasta on and the pasta being ready.
Nice.
We did the photo shoot.
Nice. Nice. Yeah.
But she was wearing like a long sleeve. black, dark blue top and long, dark jeans. So I popped a black backdrop up behind her, put a table down, threw a black shirt over it. So she's sitting on this entire black environment, and then she popped out of it and just, oh. So I was happy with that. That was
pretty. It's funny, while Max was growing up, I took heaps and heaps and heaps of photos when he was young because I knew these days were going to change. There was you were going to see change more often at those younger months and years. And I made a point, particularly in the first year of his life, of taking a photograph on the 7th of every month because he was born on the 7th.
I like that.
So that we had one for every month of his first year, and the 8-month photograph is one that is still just an absolute corker that I love, and it's actually sitting in a frame over to my left here in my office. Even though he's now 13, it's still just such a great image, and I remember taking it, and he just sat up on the bed beside a stuffed a bear. That was like 1.5 times his size, and I bounced flash off the wardrobe, which was behind me, so it just sort of really nice soft light over him, and it was just this was analog days, of course, shot on film. You take those wins when you get them.
I don't call them wins, dude.
I just mean like kids, as you say, they don't always sit still for you when you want them to.
But I saw a look in her eyes. She gave me a look for about, I don't know, 2 seconds, maybe a second, that I'd never seen before.
Okay.
And there was an intensity and a connection that I'd never seen. And this is sort of what I see what I ask for my older models is to give me that little bit of intensity. Right. Look at me with some, and she just popped it just for. I got 3 frames away during it, so it wasn't very long, but it was like it was a wow. It was one of those moments when electricity moved between photographer and model, and it's like bang, that's the shot. That's the moment of the shoot. Trying to replicate that would almost be impossible. So that was pretty amazing. It'd be
cool.
Be very very interesting to see if that comes out more often.
Right.
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen this look from my child.
Yeah, right.
And it was obviously a very deliberate thing. So that was interesting. So, you start seeing, as you say, your children change so much, and she's just going to that next phase of becoming, from a toddler to a little an actual person sort of thing, And so it'd be fascinating to see how that that exchange develops. It's very cool. I've never had that from my older daughter. I've never had that moment of just sheer intensity down the camera. And I said, and you don't get it from many models either. You don't get that moment of power when it's sort of physically coming down the lens and just blows you away whilst you're shooting. So that was there. Who knows? She could have just had a bit of gas or something. Who knows? But it translated to the shot, and the shot was had quite a bit of power to it. So
nice.
So that was a bit of fun. That's my week of shooting. And one other slightly camera related thing that happened for me this week was the lovely Gavin Blue from Heartfelt sent for the photo of the 2 cameras that we the 2 camera kits that we put together from our Christmas appeal.
Yep.
So that was really delightful to see. They're ready to be shipped out into the neonatal wards around Australia where they're most needed. So.
And do you know which hospitals they're going to?
No, I sort of gave them to their
admin people to work out.
You guys send them where the biggest need is, Yeah,
cool.
And not talking necessarily about biggest size, but if there's most of these things to do with distance away from photographers. So they're sending them out to hospitals. The Heartfelt today, there's a woman, she was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, driving 7 hours to a location, to a hospital, to do a shoot for a family, and then driving 7 hours back home again, all unpaid.
Wow.
Because there's a family in need in this remote hospital, and so this person's going to do it. Yeah.
Wow.
And then there's another one just on Facebook tonight where a woman went to do a shoot in between medical visits with her sick son. Gone to a medical visit with her sick son, whipped into the hospital to do the shoot, and then taken her son to another medical appointment.
Wow.
Yeah, which is, it just shows the power of what these people do. That's why I just love to support this organization.
Definitely.
It's wonderful, yeah.
Definitely.
So, anyway, I do have one question for you, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What do you get when you cross a joke with a rhetorical question?
No, I don't know.
Well, that's it. We're finished.
Okay.
It's a rhetorical question.
Sorry, dude. Oh, it's too late at night.
I should have thrown this joke to you a bit earlier. A Roman soldier goes into a bar and holds up two fingers and says, 5 beers, please.
What?
Roman numerals, dude. Oh, nice. If you've got to explain them, they're not as funny.
Man, it is too late at night for this.
Oh, I've got worse. I've got far worse. A Higgs boson.
Hey, actually, before you go on. While we're on that subject, this is completely unphotographic related. Roman numerals.
Oh, yes, sir.
Kath just came and told me an hour ago while I was sitting here waiting for you.
She was giving you two fingers too, wasn't she?
She said that there was a parent or a pair of parents this week who named their child Kate and spelled it K-V-I-I-I.
Oh, no.
Can you believe that?
Oh, no.
Man. That's woeful.
You know, those people should be locked up.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what I said.
Put them in the most heinous jails that we have.
Yep.
You know, and just let the prisoners at them.
Yeah, but it's stories like that make me think we really need to bring back stoning.
Oh. Oy vey.
As I said to Kath, I'd be very surprised if the Department of Births, Deaths and Marriages would recognise it.
Allow it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what cheeses me off, speaking of things like, you know, what's being allowed and not allowed?
Okay.
Is, I'm sure this applies in lots of countries, where much of our car registration and payments we pay to have a vehicle on the road goes towards funding accident claims and, you know, all this sort of stuff, and advertisement for trying to reduce road toll and stuff like that.
Yep.
Yet the same damn department allows people's personal license plates to have this ridiculous taunting, you know, I beat you kind of, you know, license plates. Oh, it gets up my goat.
Yep.
It does. Anyway, that's just me.
anyway, getting back to photography. Through the week, Adam Davidson
shared a plethora of links. Yeah, he was in some sort of strange, sort of proactive, productive week. Something must have happened. He did spend Saturday with me, mind you, so that might have kicked his... You know,
right. Okay, so I will put all of these links in the show notes, so I'm just going to run through them briefly. The first one was the new Olympus patent, which makes use of variable exposure time for different regions within the one frame.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting concept.
I think we've talked about it before. I'm sure we've
have
mentioned
we?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
But it's the sort of way where technology is headed, isn't it? Sense that can be more intelligent or working more towards getting exposure.
I'll be keen to see where it goes.
Well, it comes back to, once again, Richard Clark's questions: how has digital changed photography?
Yeah,
and it hasn't, but it's going to. And this is exactly another thing where if all your pixels are working independently, and all have their own shutters on them, or as an example, and they're all working independently about what light they're actually seeing.
Yeah. Well,
you want to be able to turn that stuff off, though.
The person, exactly. But the person who wrote the article that Adam linked to on Petapixel said, you know, the obvious potential here is that it's just going to produce images that look like HDR, and therefore, should we just process our HDR, you know, the way we do now? And the other thing was, rather than variable time, why could not different photo sites on the sensor work at different ISO ratings?
Because what if it's really bright and even the brightest one needs to be at 100? What do all the other ones work at? Yeah, or the darkest one needs to be at 100, and what all the rest work at? Yeah, variable ISO is fine if it's dark, and with light stuff? What if everything's really bright?
Yeah,
you know, there's limitations. Yeah. I think pixels having their own shutter mechanisms kind of makes more sense.
Mm.
Yeah, their own maybe even their own apertures, maybe as far as an iris for allowing light in. Mm. But I don't necessarily think it has to necessarily look like HDR, or that it has to even go to, you know, to SLR style cameras. But if you got, you know, one of the biggest failings that mum and dad photographers have is taking a photograph of little Johnny in front of a window.
Yeah.
Because little Johnny's a silhouette and you can see outside. All they want to be able to do is see little Johnny and not have some blazing white, bright halo light around his head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a point and shoot camera that's actually can do kind of what we see with our eye without all the artifacting, without all the kind of weird colors and tonal contrast that you get with HDR.
Yep.
It's just two well exposed bits of image. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's one of those watch these space kind of things, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it certainly shows that they're desperately trying to find the next thing that's going to drive people to want to go back and buy cameras. We see how we were talking about last week or the week before how every camera manufacturer is just plummeting in sales, plummeting in volume, and plummeting in profit.
Yep.
Well, why are people, there's not enough change to make people go back, or something like that wouldn't it? Yeah, you think a lot of people go, oh, cameras have significantly changed again. They changed to digital? Not really. They changed to digital, now they're changing to this, and people will jump on it.
Yep.
My camera now does photos like, oh, I see the world.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Who knows? Yeah.
The next link was drone with lights attached makes for some incredible light painting photographs. I'll let you go and check out the link for this one. Basically, these guys had attached some really, El Cheapo lights from Home Depot to a quadcopter, flown it around at nighttime, and then mirrored, one side of the image so that you ended up with these sort of, I keep thinking fractal, but fractal's not the right word. What are the ones where they're like mirror imaged?
Let's just call them mirror images.
Let's call them mirror images.
Yeah.
There's another name I can't think of.
It's 11 o'clock at night. Let's just call them. Yeah, they've mirrored the images and they look rather pretty.
Yes, yeah, they do.
The skill and talent involved that these guys are displaying are fantastic. I mean, I can't even fly one of these things in a straight line.
No.
Let alone doing a pattern.
Exactly.
A deliberate pattern.
Yeah.
Scary stuff. So that's kind of cool.
The next one was the Target Photoshop fail, which I think anyone on Facebook will have seen over the last couple of days.
Yeah.
That's just absolutely appalling stuff. The one after that was the images from Germany.
World War One, yes. 1915.
That's right, it was too. So
almost 100 years old.
Yeah, wow. Images shot by a World War One German photographer at the front, and just the horrors of war and, and just seeing it from the other side, the Western world always sort of...
The victor always tells the history, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a haunting image there of Christ on a crucifix.
Yes.
Yeah, with these dead German soldiers in the front. It's a very emotive capture, and he's got quite a few of those. I mean, there's some sort of seen all that sort of stuff before, but there are a couple of pretty interesting shots in the group. But they've been lost for 97 years or something, and the son found them just 3 years ago in a drawer or something. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
unearthing that sort of stuff.
And the last of the links that Adam put up was another one from Petapixel. It was 9 features every DSLR should have now.
Yeah.
I really liked this. There was focus peaking, where you get the little red indicators on the LCD display to show you where the focus is actually pin sharp, in your frame, in your composition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which a lot of point and shoot cameras offer, but very few DSLRs seem to. Live histogram, I would love that. Variable rate motor drive, which is an interesting one.
Well, a lot of them do have that anyway, high speed, low speed.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just because you've only got a Sony, dude. My camera's got all of these three things so far. Keep going.
Right, okay. Faster flash sync.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I can do high speed sync on my on my Sony, but it's not the same. I really do wish that, you know, you could just work in any mode at a faster shutter speed than a 250th.
Yeah.
As this person writing this said, you know, the Nikon D1, which came out, 20 years ago or something, was able to do a 500th.
Yeah, so an electronic crappy shutter, yeah.
But now, you know, everything maxes out at a 250th.
Yeah, but almost again, you find the cheaper cameras have the higher shutter speeds and the more expensive cameras have the lower ones.
Why?
Well, because it's the mechanism, the type of shutter they use, that they're using these shutters that can withstand this massive amount of shooting. They build them to a certain rigidity, I'm assuming. That's part of what the problem is.
Right.
And so almost all pro-end cameras had this limitation with the slightly slower. I mean, we're talking a third of a stop. We're not talking anything whoop-de-doo, massively world-changing.
No.
But it is a third regardless. But, so look, I'd like it. I'd like to be able to do. See, yes, I can do high-speed syncing, but I want to do it off-camera. Without spending $700 on each flash, I want to do it with, and so on. You know, it's, but you know, so that's not a bad one. What else was
there? Wireless networking, which I think is coming. I think that's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I've got that in my camera too. So we're batting with
the use of an iFi card.
No,
just built into the camera.
Yep, built in Wi-Fi. Yep.
Cool. Yep. GPS.
Got it. Yeah.
You think you're smart?
I have. But here's the thing: 9 things we wish a camera had. Well, a lot of cameras out there have got this stuff already.
Oh, I wouldn't say a lot.
Well, it's available for you to go buy.
About things. Two.
If those are the things that are important to you, they're available to buy.
Yeah.
It's not like this is something I really, really want and I can't buy because no camera in the world's got it.
But the thing is, the blog post was called 9 Features Every DSLR should have now. Not some DSLRs should have now.
DSLRs are designed to be cheap, a lot of them. Yeah, they want them. And you've got to be some differentiation between the $600 body and the $2,000 body. Otherwise, why would people buy the $2,000 one?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, well, keep on.
Facial detection focusing?
Yeah, no.
No. Programmable?
But that relies on, therefore, you're using your live view screen to shoot with. And what self-respecting photographer... No, I shouldn't say that. that's something you're going to be doing on a fairly... If you're shooting people, I would be wanting to be thinking you're looking through the viewfinder.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Realistically, yeah. But still. Yeah.
Programmable? I'm not sure what that was all about.
Well, I guess it's...
I haven't read the whole paragraph.
Dialing up more than 30 seconds would be a nice thing to try. Yeah, what about intervalometer that you want to do one photo every 10 seconds? That should be able to do that too.
Yeah. And the last one was video autofocus.
Well, mine does that too, just really badly.
Right. Well, there you go. So Glenn's camera has it. For the rest of us, we just have to wait.
No. So Canon 6D, everybody. Yeah.
And this afternoon, Carl Hemming sent us a great link. Indeed. I don't know if you did. Did you see this one? Yeah, did you watch the video?
What is it?
The one about... Good on you. A National Geographic photographer by the name of Paul Nicklin went down to Antarctica to photograph leopard seals. Now, leopard seals, when they open their mouth, you will see they have a set of teeth like a leopard.
A great white to be almost proud of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They are a nasty-looking set of teeth.
Very territorial and very aggressive. And
it's a very funny video. Like, it's amazing, but it's funny at the same time.
He's the same guy who did... He's a remarkable... I met him in Melbourne a few months ago.
Oh, yeah.
He's the same guy who did the not the polar bears, but the white bear photographs. Remember we talked a couple of weeks ago, it took him 2 tons of gear to photograph these bears?
Vaguely, yeah.
He took a barge up some river up in Alaska to photograph these. They're basically
polar like grizzly bears.
But well, no, they live in a forest. They're not ice, but they're white. But he took in 2 tons of gear. It's the same guy. He does some remarkable stuff.
So do they poop in the forest?
Well, does the Pope? but the story behind that seal is remarkable. What that seal was doing for him over a few days. It's a wonderful story.
It's a great story.
And you've got to look at his book to check him out online. He's got a fantastic book on his images, and he is a very good photographer. So
cool. Steve Peters gave us another quote.
That was a good one too.
I'm not sure who the quote is from, but it's a pearler. The only photographer you should compare yourself to is the one you used to be.
Yeah.
Nice. Really like that.
That's a cracker.
Yeah. Reg Vardy had a couple of quotes.
Big Reg. Reg, my mate from Western Australia.
Right. Several more photography quotes, not all inspirational, but I got a smile out of them. Anything more than 500 yards from the car just isn't photogenic. Nice.
I'm down with that one for sure. In fact, many a time, if it's on the other side of the car, I'll wind the window down and shoot out my side with the window. But if it's out the other window, it's not. I might turn the car around if it's really important.
This one, again, this was sent to us by Reg. This next one was from James Kivom, New York photojournalist. It's weird that photographers spend years or even a whole lifetime trying to capture moments that, added together, don't even amount to a couple of hours.
Well, That's sort of, you know, back in the film days, I'd agree with that. But the average wedding photographer takes 7,000 or 8,000 photos these days.
Yeah.
You know, that's a couple of thousand seconds straight. I mean, by the time they've done 50 or 60 weddings, I mean, they're up to a significant amount of hours. They're banking up the hours pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But that's very true. If you think about how many fractions of a second into a couple of hours.
And the last one was one of the two quote-unquote gentleman running the Perth CPW workshop made a comment I still haven't forgotten. I started to point out some quote-unquote pretty locations at the start of the day when he interrupted with, "Reg, we're not here for pretty. I don't want pretty. I want the worst locations that I can find. We're here to make amazing photos with the light." Was that you or Shelton?
Well, we're both arrogant sods. It could have been either of us.
Nice.
Let's say it was Shelton. He's not here to defend.
Fair enough.
but at the same time, that Reg is very true. That's exactly what would have been the point. But if you could have arranged pretty with fantastic light,
yeah,
fantastic.
Bring it on.
But the chances of that happening are fairly slim. it doesn't happen that often, does it? I mean,
no.
Every time you go to a location for a location shoot and the light's great, not that often.
Mm.
Yeah. I've just got a couple of things for us to go through, and then we can rack off and go to bed.
Okay.
Not together. He's in Sydney, folks. I'm in Melbourne, so a good 1,000 kilometres apart. But one was just some photographs of the recent Iditarod up in Alaska, which is something I've always had a big fascination for.
What is an Iditarod?
Oh, you don't know it?
No.
It's the big husky sled dog race up in Alaska.
Oh, nice.
And just not all, but some of the shots in there are beautiful. So,
right.
But I'm not sure if it's all from different sources, the photographs. Yeah, some people seem to have a lot better grasp on what they're doing, but some of them are just are terrific. So definitely worth having a look at.
I love number four with the dog's got his paw on his owner's face. That's great.
Yeah, so look how sore this damn thing is. I mean, they go through hell, those animals, in this thing. So, it's a brutal event. Through incredibly harsh conditions, you are regarded as the toughest of the tough if you can survive this thing, you know.
Yeah, right.
So it's a great series. I think my favourite is A Fair Way Down. There's one of this
number 12, the one taken from high up in the air.
No,
the shadows.
It's a bit cliche, but it's going to be number 19.
Oh, I haven't got that far yet. Hang on, I just got to number 14 with the dogs with their little bright fluoro-coloured socks on.
Precious little things, aren't they?
Dear. Okay, so number 19. Oh, okay. With them sort of backlit.
Yeah, well, it's the light that makes the photo. Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. But there's some great shots in there of them going across ice floes and all sorts of stuff. So it's pretty cool. So if anyone's got a bit of the outdoor spirit in them, but the armchair outdoor spirit, sit in your armchair and watch it.
Wow, there are some great images here.
There are, yeah. Wow. So it's
definitely worth checking out.
Definitely worth checking out. From there, there's a thing on doing the rounds about this guy on Instagram who made $15,000 in a day.
Wow. Instagram?
Yeah, well, he was short on funds, so he had a fairly large following.
Right.
And so people could choose whichever photo they wanted. He'd do a 6x4 of it, right, which is odd because, of course, most of Instagram photos are square.
Yeah.
So good luck doing a 6x4. Or 4x6, depending on where you come from, for $150 a piece, and he'd sign it and send it to you.
Wow.
And he sold, $15,000 worth in a day.
Wow.
So that was an interesting one. And then a thing that came out this week where Nikon and Sigma have been in court.
Oh, okay.
And Nikon suing Sigma for the use of their vibration control, their image stabilizer, whatever Nikon want to call it, Sigma call theirs.
Sorry, who's suing who?
Well, Nikon's suing Sigma for basically using their parts of their patented technology, right, inside their lenses. So the court case, they had to pay out 15% of all the profit that those lenses made over the course of, imagine trying to, okay, these four lenses have it, and we sold this many of them, and therefore. And we made this much profit from what we sold, and therefore you get 15. But that'd be a hard thing to work out.
Be an accounting nightmare.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, but I'm sure they love those challenges. Keeps them, as accountants, they love a good challenge, good number challenge. Yeah. And I saw another. I know I bang on about apps a lot. I know I'm a big fan of the mobile office because that's kind of what I do. But I saw a great one for working photographers, which I thought was just fantastic. It's called Shoot and Sell App.
Okay.
And the thing is, basically, with your iPad, let's say you've got all your customers' photos on your iPad, you go into their house to do a viewing and try and get them to buy stuff.
Yeah.
One of the hardest things that any photographer / salesperson in this position has is trying to convince people to order big enough prints.
Right.
Because what you might think, I'll just get an 11x14, that'll look great on the wall, and then you get it on the wall and it looks tiny.
Yeah.
The photographer's trying to convince them, no, you really need a 16x20, and they're going, trying to upsize the photographs. Of course, that's where the money's at as well.
Yeah.
Well, this app, you can go to the house and you can take a photo of the wall it's going to go on.
Oh, nice.
And you put the photo up, and it will scale itself to whatever size image. So you can show them what it's going to look like with an 11x14, with a 16x20, with a 20x24.
Nice. And they'll see
on their wall just how much space it's going to take up.
Oh, now, that's cool.
And if that doesn't increase your sales, it's like a $25 app. And if you don't get that back tenfold in your first demonstration, you'll certainly, just people get a feel for just, people understand how big a photograph is. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, if all you ever get is 6x4s, you think an 11x14 is a big print, but it's not on a wall. So it was a great, the app actually does a hell of a lot more than that.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Of course you can.
And say that a much cheaper option is just to take a bunch of photo frames with you at different sizes and just.
No, not remotely.
Why not?
Because you want to show their photo on their
wall. I get that.
You sell by emotion. You don't sell by, look at the pretty frame.
I didn't mean because of the frame. I just meant to give a representation of size.
No, wouldn't have any effect.
Okay.
Very little effect. You've got to show them and the photo they're emotionally connected to on the wall.
Fair enough.
Then they own that vision of it.
Right.
You put four pieces of wood up on a wall or aluminium, and it has no impact because there's nothing. Even if you have a photo on it, it's not them.
Yeah.
So this shows them in their environment how they're going to look,
cool.
And that's where the power is. The power is in. It's an $80 app. I thought it was a $25 app. It's an $80 app.
Wow.
So it'd want to be good. Yeah. But
you'd make that back in no time.
Oh yeah, it does a whole bunch of other stuff. That's just the one thing to me that really, really connected us on there. That's a powerful tool.
Yeah.
And so if you are a working photographer, that is Yeah.
And that'd be a tax deductible expense anyway.
Oh, of course. Of course. So. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's it for me for the week, my friend.
Nice.
I do want to finish off my Higgs boson joke.
Oh, sorry. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So a Higgs boson walks into a church. And the church says, the priest in the church says, "I'm sorry, we don't serve your type here." And he goes, "Well, without me, how do you have any mass?"
Nice.
One of those weeks.
Excellent. All right, mate. Will you have a good weekend?
I will. I will indeed. And to all our lovely listeners out there, I'll just put some funky music back on to finish off our very special night together. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like having a cigarette now, Bruce. Actually, that's not true. If I'm a male, I'd be asleep by now.
That's it.
You have a lovely weekend.
Will do, matey.
And we'll talk very soon.
Will do. See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.